Hey guys, this is Mike Mahaffey, the old bastard BJJ guy, here for BJJ Metal Models. Back in my day, we had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get to the academy just to learn some crappy technique from a random purple belt. You kids have it so easy, because now you can just subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium and get tons of great audio courses to learn new techniques, enhance your mindset, and entertain yourself. You can even get personalized rolling reviews from some of your favorite BJJ Metal Models coaches, including me. It's like having your own seminar, you spoiled little whippersnappers. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium right now, get off my lawn, and go train.
Hey, welcome to BJJ Mental Models, episode 277. I'm Steve Kwan. BJJ Mental Models is your guide to a conceptual and intelligent jiu-jitsu approach, and I'm here today with a first-timer but a long-requested guest, Mike Jaramillo. How's it going, Mike?
Very good, Steve. Thank you for having me. I appreciate your time.
No worries. I appreciate your time. You've been long requested. I think we've got a bunch of people in our community who either train directly with you or at least close to you, and they've been asking me for a long time to get you on the podcast here. But maybe a good place to start is telling everyone why you've been so requested. Talk to me a little bit about your jiu-jitsu journey and what you're working on, and also your work in the mental health space, because I think that's going to touch on what we get into here today.
I absolutely appreciate it. I am the head no-gi instructor at the main academy at Henzo Gracie headquarters. It's located at 224 West 30th. A lot of people know it through the fame of the Blue Basement. GSP was John Danaher, it was my original teacher. John was not a black belt. He was actually, had just gotten his purple, and I was a white belt, and we met in 1998. Johnny, he wasn't teaching, he was a fellow student, and he would just help me. He was very kind to me, mentored me, and I am his first black belt. I received my black belt from him in 2005. I'm currently a fifth degree black belt. I'm passionate about the sport. If you want to say that before Gordon and the DDS kids, it was me. And, you know, John took a tremendous amount of time in teaching me the sport. So I'm really thankful. If you know John, he's really brilliant. Most people, don't know how intelligent he is. But I'll tell you a really quick story. His favorite book, he's read over 200 times. He's probably at 300 now. We're talking about a 1,000-page novel. So John's really, really passionate about BJJ. So I was fortunate enough to meet him just randomly. What are the crazy coincidences in life that I meet this guy in 1998 just by accident. I joined that place, and within one day I met him. And then he started telling me, do this next time and do that. And I was just having tremendous success because back then YouTube and all these things didn't exist. So I had access to knowledge. So I would be able to submit much higher belts. People that were there for years, because Johnny would just go, next time you get caught, do this. So it isn't like now in those DVDs and YouTube. So that's how I came up. And then John started teaching there and I became a student. I competed a little bit, coached a lot. I have a lot of kids still fighting. Right now, I don't have any high-level players playing BJJ. John left about 2.5 years ago. And when he left, everybody knows the story about, the DD, what's it called? B-Team and New Wave. And everybody was at the Blue Basement back then. From Gordon to Craig Jones to Nick Rodriguez, they were all there. But when the talent left, those guys left. And now there's some new kids. They're up and coming. They'd be surprised at how good they are in 3 years. And that's kind of my journey. I started teaching. I took over the Blue Basement when Johnny left. They asked me to take over. It was crazy irony that I met him, first black belt, and then I take over the program when he leaves. But I love that place. But half of my life has been on that mat there. And I'm really passionate about it. I just love the sport. To me, it's fun, but it's also so powerful in how it affects people mentally. Anybody that's achieved the level of black, if you said to them, what would your life be without BJJ? They just couldn't imagine it. And what I found during COVID was a lot of people, friends, you weren't allowed to train and places were closed. And there were some really hard mental challenges that people were dealing with. And I realized, like, gosh, boy, that BJJ really is people's happy pill. And if people don't know, I do this thing called the Happy Pill Project. And it's really just BJJ helping people mentally. I try to bring people to the sport because, as you know, it's like once you achieve black, like, you don't really, it doesn't revolve around fighting anymore. It's like this beautiful, like, form of meditation. And you build these, like, beautiful relationships with people that become your friends for life. Because, you know, in every other facet of life, you're never allowed to invade a person's space, right? Because of human resources or something. You don't speak to somebody, basically, 2 inches away from their lips. It just doesn't happen unless they're your wife or an intimate person in your life. But in BJJ, it's just common. It's like, I'm on top of you, we're mounted, and I'm like telling you something in your face. And like, it's so, you don't experience this anywhere else where there's like, you're so close and so, you get so comfortable with this person and you build this bond, whether it's a male or a female, like, they build these incredible relationships. If anybody's ever read that book by Sebastian Unger, I think that I pronounced his name correctly. I might have messed that up, but he wrote that book, Tribe. And there was a part of it when they talked about these people that were going out west, and they would, you know, the Indians would kill the males and then kidnap the women and the children and then bring them in and introduce them to their tribe. And then the American soldiers would come and liberate them. And then they would break away from the American soldiers and run back to the tribe. It was made because if you understand like BJJ and how it becomes this community, really, it's the same exact thing. It's this tribe that you develop and this bonds and these friendships. And it's a form of meditation. I know there's other sports that do it, but not like BJJ. Like fly fishing does it in acting. Golf has the crazy passion also, but that's a different reason. You can't think of anything else when you're rolling. You just can't. If you're an actor, you're supposed to be in the moment. If you're fly fishing, if you ever tried, I'm not a fly fisherman, but I've tried it. And you have to live in the moment. Your mind can't wander. You're constantly in an activity. And BJJ has that power that it takes you away from everything that's happening in your life. Whether it's negative or positive, it doesn't matter. It gives you a break that mentally you are not thinking of anything else when you're rolling because your partner really is trying to strangle you. He's trying to get you in a position that could potentially break a limb. Like, so you have to be living in the moment. On top of that, it gives you the aspect of exercise that, you know, for besides the cardio in your heart, which is awesome, potentially lose weight, gain some muscle, all these things that people want to do. Like, you want to go live, you want a great body for the beach, go on the mat and roll. You'll lose weight, you'll get better cardio, you'll get fitter, all these things. So the BJJ, there's so many things, so many boxes that it checks. And like, besides what I was speaking about before, the community aspect, the form of like almost meditative, the form of exercise. And if you think about exercise, like besides like some people need it, right? But some people do it just to release those endorphins in their brain, like because you walk out and you just feel good. If you take about, you think about all those things I just said, it is people's happy pill. It really is. And the people that have never tried it to listen to this podcast, I understand it's like a little bit intimidating to walk in, a little bit scary. You know, you're walking in, and I know because I'll just tell a really quick story. My nephew goes to the University of Pittsburgh, and he's just starting BJJ. I call it the yin and the yang in my life. My daughter and my two nephews want no part of BJJ, really. But within BJJ, so many people want to ask me questions about critiquing their game and, you know, moves and angles and all bunch of stuff. But I call it the yin and the yang. But I'm going to go back to my nephew. I asked him to meet me at the academy, and he didn't want to come. And when I asked him the next day, I said, what happened? And he said, man, I don't know. I just felt intimidated to go there without you. And I thought to myself, wow, I forget how intimidating the place is. Like you walk in there and, you know, people are sweating, obviously. It smells a bit. You hear the loud pounding of mitts and fists and you see these fighters. And again, it's intimidating. I forgot about how intimidating it is. But if you can get past that and you get the courage and maybe go with a friend, it can potentially just transform your life. I've seen it so many times. I've also seen where people maybe can't make eye contact, a little bit like fearful of speaking in crowds that they don't know. Like all these little things of shyness, self-confidence. I've seen BJJ transform lives, where that same person that couldn't make eye contact when they speak, potentially is a bit shy meeting new people, they're walking up to people now and going, hey, you want to roll with me? They meet somebody new. They look them in the eyes. They can give hugs. Before, it was something that was really weird to give a person a hug sometimes. For me, I give everybody a hug. Master Enzo gives everybody a hug. Johnny doesn't. But Johnny always worries about germs. So Johnny is not a big hugger, but I am a guy that wants to hug, and I appreciate people's love and affection. And so, but I, going back to the individual, I've seen BJJ transform lives that we talked earlier about, that aspect of like close quarters where you're speaking to somebody so closely and the bonds. Like BJJ has just this amazing power. I don't know how other martial arts are in that aspect, but BJJ, and I don't think others do, because others, if you think about karate, kung fu, and those arts, they don't have that closeness that you're liking constant physical touching. And we could talk about the BJJ aspect of muscle twitches and all those things later, but that's basically how I've come up and how I've morphed into, or you want to call it. I just have a love for people. And if anybody watches, and you know, maybe we do a day that, hey, just bring a friend day. That'd be awesome. That we introduce somebody new. And that's what I've been trying to do with the Happy Pill and another organization that I volunteer for called We Define. We could speak about that, Steve, if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it, man. I think that we should probably talk both about Happy Pill and We Defy. Share what you're working on here. I think everyone wants to know.
Oh, absolutely. We Defy is an organization that puts a veteran that is dealing with some mental issues in a program and introduce them to BJJ. So anybody out there that is interested, if they could somehow contact the program, or Cynthia's on this email, we can contact them, introduce them. What they do is they put a person in a BJJ school for 1 year, and they buy them two gis. And what we call them is ambassadors. And basically, it's a person that also volunteers, has been part of the program, and they follow up with them. So you're going to get support for this person also, so they continue to attend. We're in 49 states. I don't know what the current enrollment is, but we basically are putting in about 45 new members a month. I think there's about 800 members, 800 people on scholarship right now. That's what they call it, the 1 year. And it's basically, do we have enough money to put more people in? This weekend, our Henzo Gracie's did its second annual. So it's the second time we're doing it. I was mentioning earlier when we were off mic, we raised this weekend $70,000. We did a 2-day fundraiser. Jared Gordon from the UFC, who's been my student for many years, and I actually just gave him a black belt 2 weeks ago. He was the featured speaker. If you don't know Jared Gordon's story, you should look it up. He's got an amazing story. He was assaulted. He was sexually molested as an 8-year-old boy at a summer camp, medicated himself through the years with all different things like heroin and cocaine, and was homeless and panhandling. Incredible story. But through all those things, I'll fast forward. 10 years ago, he was in the basement of Madison Square Garden panhandling, shooting dope in his veins, and living on the street. Had been institutionalized for suicide a couple of times, and all these things would, you know, and somehow he found BJJ. He found martial arts. And that led into him training under me and me helping him and some other coaches helping him. And then 10 years later in November, he fought that guy. I don't remember the young man's name, but the young man's really good, an Olympian. And he fought him, and he had a first round knockout. So he went from the basement of Madison Square Garden, one of the most famous arenas in the world, to fighting in the same building in these past 10 years. Like, he's just been an incredible inspiration to so many people, and seeing that sometimes life is hard, and you think that you're dealing with some things that you can't overcome, you can overcome them, you know, like never give up. Like, and Jared never gave up, and no one ever gave up on him. And 10 years later, he fought in Madison Square Garden. So he was our featured speaker. We did a 2-day event. A couple of different teachers, myself and three other teachers, taught different moves. We had them roll. Like, it was just great turnout. We were able to raise $70,000. So 28 new scholarships will be purchased. Last year, we raised $40,000. I personally go on the road and try to raise. I have a goal every time I go to a new place and do a seminar. I try to raise $2,800 more. So one person, just one, maybe can transform their life, or just maybe they're ready to give up, and somehow BJJ is able to touch them. And magically, like, it touches your soul, it touches your outlook, everything about you. I've seen it so many times, Steve. And I asked you this earlier, how long you've been doing BJJ? You told me 15 years and you're a black belt. And yeah, I know that you can't count the amount of times that you left that place rolling. You were like, wow, man, that was awesome. And whether you got your butt kicked or you were the one kicking butt, didn't matter. And then you love those people, the same ones that are trying to kill you. They're the first ones, when you need help, they'll be there for you because you build this bond. So I'm getting off topic for a little bit, but Weedify is an amazing organization. I actually go on the road. If anybody's interested, I will be in Chicago, April, the first week of April. I'm going to the West Coast Trials. And then that first week of April, I am in Chicago. I don't know how we could post that, but I don't have all the details. A young lady helps me out. Her name is Cynthia Yang. And she will, she could list that for us. Somehow we could post that, Steve. And all the money, literally, it's almost every dollar, almost every person's a volunteer. And we have to pay for some things, obviously, accountant, some marketing, the small little things. Every t-shirt we sell, like, everything goes to try to put a new person in the program. I will be in Chicago first week, two-day seminar. I'm in Minnesota, Minneapolis, July like 20th and 21st, I think it is. And then I'm in Canada later in the year. I'm sorry, I don't know the dates, but, and I sign up for a bunch of them. I can't sign up for that many this year because the ADCC is going on and I got some kids that want to go to it and compete and stuff. So, but it's a great program. I also do this thing called Happy Pill Project. And what I said earlier was that a lot of people, BJJ is their happy pill. And basically, it's the same thing. It's just bringing mental awareness. I mean, bringing awareness to mental health. A lot of people, what I found during COVID, they were really down, you know, whether it be financially or just being home and not unsure about their outcomes and stuff. Like, BJJ was the one saving thing for so many. I mean, you can see the statistics, like antidepressants are at an all-time high, you know, suicide rates at an all-time high. By the way, the thing with the veterans, it's an incredible stat, but it's 22 veterans commit suicide per day. 22. That's literally almost one per hour kids kills themselves. So that the effect of BJJ in stopping those outcomes has been amazing. I mean, not that it stopped it in any big matter, but if any little thing that we could do. So I have four of them scheduled this year. The Happy Pill Project is something that I started, and it's pretty much the same thing. I've just been going on the road and volunteering my time in different schools and giving a 1 or 2 day seminar. I pretty much, any money that comes in now, I try to donate it to Weedify. Not if there's any sums that come out of it, it's my plane ride. I usually will even pay for my Uki to go. And sometimes they'll be kind enough to pay for a hotel for me. I forgot who quote, there was a quote, really famous quote, but basically, like, you know, you're on this world for a certain amount of time. Like, you could accumulate money and fame and all these things, but, you know, things that have substances are making a difference, you know, affecting people in positive ways. And if you can do those things and make money and all those other things you want to do, that's awesome. But the big thing is, like, it's, I've been fortunate to have some other incomes that I make outside of BJJ. So I've been really lucky. So I try to help some other people along the way because I've gotten some help myself along the way where people have been there for me. I'd like to be there for others.
Amazing, man. Well, a lot to unpack there. And, you know, something I've said on the podcast many times very much aligns with what you're saying about the transformative power of jujitsu. I'm not going to be that guy who says jujitsu's for everyone because, look, there's people who it just doesn't resonate with. I understand that. But I do think everyone should try jujitsu at least once. At least once. Because at least then, first of all, you've done something impressive. Because like you said, the hardest part is getting started, right? Trying it for the first time can be tremendously intimidating. Yeah, some people are going to bounce off of it. But for the people who stay, it's a really weirdly life-changing experience and a practice in a way that's kind of hard to explain to people, right? I mean, if you were to explain to someone who's never done this, that one of the most meaningful things you do in your life is you put on some combat pajamas and you go to a room with a bunch of, you know, complete strangers and you just beat the shit out of each other for fun, right? It sounds absurd. Just like how if you watch the movie Fight Club, right? The whole idea of a fight club sounds absurd, but when you actually do it, you realize there's a lot more there. And I think you touched on this perfectly. It's really not about fighting. I mean, when I got into jiu-jitsu, like so many people did, I'm sure you did as well, right? People get into jiu-jitsu usually because they want to learn to defend themselves. You know, they want to learn discipline. They want to build confidence. They want to get in shape. And over time, those goals are going to morph and the practice itself becomes a reward. And then people are going to get focused on being the most effective combat grappler they can. And maybe they have competitive goals that they want to achieve. But I agree with you completely that once you hit black belt, once you've been around for so long, all of that kind of fades away and it becomes sort of less important. And what really is important and what sticks with you is the relationships that you built and the power of jiu-jitsu as a tool to give back to other people. That is something I never expected, that I would be able to use jiu-jitsu as a way to give back to people. I mean, this podcast, right? We've got premium subscribers all over the world. You mentioned Cynthia Yang. I believe she's one of our subscribers as well. We get to use a percentage of that revenue to give back and sponsor athletes who need help. And that's just so cool. I never thought that jiu-jitsu would be something that has that benefit to help other people. It's really not about yourself. And I know that sounds so crazy because people get into this thinking it's, you know, you're trying to simulate murder on someone. How can this be a tool for growth? But I would love to hear you maybe expand on that a little bit and why you think that is, because I hear this so much with black belts, but I think that junior people, they don't really understand how that's possible. But I think it's inevitable that if you stick around this long enough, you're going to develop that kind of mindset about jiu-jitsu as a tool for growth, for community, for support. Tell me what you think about that.
I'd like to say two things about that. When sometimes, and there's different forms of answering that, where you said it's not for everybody. There's what recently watched a young man that didn't have a lower torso, and he's doing MMA. It was a documentary I watched. I have a student that is blind. If you roll with him, he does gi. If you roll with him, you're in a war, man. You're in a freaking war. Like, once he grabs on, he's good. And, you know, he's also a school teacher. He's totally blind. He's a school teacher. He's a avid hiker, ice hiking. He plays goalie for a team. I know it sounds pretty wild, but I don't know all the things about the league, but he goes to the batting cage. And he hits the ball. He hears sound because the headquarters is a very big academy. It's not the norm, you know, like 2,000 students. Like, so I get to see a lot of different things there. There are ladies in there just starting out that are in their 60s, men that are just starting out in their 70s, right? And we're talking about late 70s. So, and it's saying about not for everybody, maybe in smaller schools where it's like 200 people and that maybe the demographics, it's like 18 to 45, and you just assume like, oh, they don't do it. No, they do it. And now if you go to the worlds, there's like masters 7 and 8. I was surprised at how, I hate to say the word old, but how old the bracket was, where they had to be in their late 70s. So if somebody 45 or 50 and like, you got two legs, you got two arms, forget about it. Like, I've had people on the mat that are amputees. So that answer to that, I was just, you know, just because people out there listening that might say like, you know, I wish my brother can go, but he's overweight, or, you know, his arm doesn't work or his shoulder doesn't work. Yeah, I know, but this other guy can't see. And the other guy only had one leg. And this other guy only has one arm. They can go. You know, so people sometimes make excuses that they don't have every limb working, or the world isn't just right for them. Yeah, everybody should, like what you said, everybody should try it. But people sometimes will already write it off and go, you know what, I can't go because I've never done athletics before and I'm 54. My God, you come to the Henzo Gracie Academy, you know how many 54-year-old people I have in there. That academy are just starting out and they love it. Or 60 plus just started and they are addicted. I see them every single day on the mat. So anybody listening out there has a mother, a father, a brother, BJJs can potentially just change. Just that's what just changed, because they could be really positive people, but it's just a wonderful thing to add to their life. And what we spoke about earlier, but going to the second thing about how it improves. And I think that was the question. I'm really good friends with the guy that did the production of 60 Minutes when they did Henzo's interview on 60 Minutes. It's the second most watched episode, I think. That particular episode, there's a line that Henzo says in the car. And he says, the greatest thing a man can have in his heart is the will to fight. And, you know, some people think that that means like physical fighting. No, it's not that. It's literally the will just to get up every day. It's a fight. You got to get up every day. Go to work. You want a better job. You want more money. You want a better relationship with your wife. You want, you name it. I don't care what it is. You want to just become a better human being. Maybe you read more. Maybe you study literature. Maybe whatever it could be. There's an internal thing inside of you that you have to become disciplined. You know, forget about motivation. Motivation's silly because everybody always, I got to get motivated. I tell my young kids that all the time. Like motivation is great. Right. But the will to be disciplined, which is back to the thing about fighting, the will to fight, to do the things that you don't want to do, but you know you should do and you have to do, are so important. And BJJ, like in anything in life, right? Like you get knocked down, but in BJJ, you get put in a bad position, you got to fight to get out of it. You get knocked down, you got to fight to get back up. You're always fighting never to get submitted. You're fighting to submit. That mindset, it looks different, but it's the same thing. I sometimes say this about moves. I'll say to somebody, that's the same move. And they'll go, what are you talking about? I go, it's the same move. The entry came in different. Because, but when they look at it, they realize like, oh, it is the same move. But they don't realize it because it comes in at a different angle. Or it may be, whatever it may be, you were passing and then you ended up there before. You were in the bottom somehow and you ended up there. I don't want to get too complicated with it, but BJJ is that. It's like you constantly are fighting to improve a position. You're never giving up. You get knocked down, you fight to get back up. You get your guard passed, you got to fight to get your guard back. You're the dominant player, you're fighting to get a submission. So that mindset of constantly trying to improve your position is what you want to transfer over to life, right? Because unless you really don't have that passion that you just want to be a couch potato, put the TV on and never move. But everybody wants to look better, I think. And I wouldn't just say everybody, but 99% of the population wants to look better. They want to look better physically. They want to feel better mentally. So BJJ, if you go down to the essence of it, it's that same thing that Henzo said, the will to fight. You're doing this round after round. Then the other thing is you want to get back because you become addicted to the sport because it's really an awesome sport. The discipline that has to be behind it is like, I got to go there. If I want to get better at this, I got to do this often. It just can't be like, oh, once a month. Like, I got to do this short. So now you start to develop discipline of getting there 3 times a week, 4 times a week. You know, then the discipline of practicing. Then when you start the rounds to roll, the will to fight. Doesn't matter if you're the nail or you're the hammer. Either one, you got to fight. You know, sometimes the word fight, people associate it with physical combat. Let's forget about that. It's just BJJ is sport. That's number one, sport. It's not real fight. Even UFC, that's fighting, but that's not real fighting. That's like, that's fighting with rules. Street fighting, like you don't allow knees to the skull. You don't, there's so many things. So regardless, BJJ, we're going to go backwards now, back to BJJ. BJJ is the same thing. You just tap. You're in a bad position. You just tap. They'll stop. You can control this. But as you get a little bit competitive, you want, you realize, man, I'm not going to get submitted. I'm going to fight not to get submitted. I'm going to fight to recover my guard. That mindset of continuously doing it transfers over into your everyday world. How you do anything in life is how you do everything. So your people understand, if you're a person that's messy and doesn't really pay attention to details and things like that's like everywhere in your life. But how you do anything is how you do everything. So if you start changing your mindset, getting to black belt and brown belt, to me, like the belts are meaningless. I don't mean to disrespect anybody, but your progress and the mindset, and I don't really care if you become a BJJ champion, but it's that mindset of like continuously coming, you become disciplined. You're drilling, you become disciplined. right? Then you start that will to fight when you're rolling. That mindset transfers over into everyday life. They don't separate. You may not see it. You're just like, all of a sudden you start going, man, you know, I got to do my laundry because I got to go to BJJ and I got to organize my stuff because I want to go to BJJ. And then you start understanding they don't see it because when you're in the fire, you don't really see well or you don't really understand. Most people can, you know, see somebody else's life and totally understand, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that, but they'll make the same mistakes, right? So I just think that if you stick with it, it's an amazing thing. Wrestling has that aspect also because wrestling, you're going to be a grind. But the problem with wrestling is that when you're going feet to floor live, you can't sustain that. You can't sustain that long term. That's why, like most people, they wrestle to, if they get into college and they continue wrestling, they'll go to 22. But you won't find guys 36, 38, 48, 55. A 55-year-old person can't get picked up and slammed on the mat, right? Just not possible. So you don't really see it in wrestling. But wrestling does build that aspect in young people. And then that transfers a lot of times over into their life later on. Judo also has that effect also because of the combat with it. But the problem with judo also is the same thing. You can play it much later in life. You know how to fall, but it's hard. I don't mean disrespect to judo, but you know, a lot of people, like you say, they might say, well, you learn how to break fall and you learn how to take a throw and stuff. You're still getting slammed. Like, there's no other way around it. And then if you never adopt that, and there's times that you get slammed off or, listen, I love feet to floor too, but a lot of injuries happen that way. And that's why I think that BJJ, it's like, it's so safe and it builds that will to fight constantly and like transfers over into everyday world.
100%, man. And, you know, one of the things I love about jiu-jitsu, just touching on what you said, is the sheer accessibility of the sport. People have theorized before that one of the reasons soccer is so popular worldwide is because of just how accessible it is. You know, all you really need is a ball and 10 other friends or whatever, 9 other friends, and then you're good to go. You can play soccer. And that's probably part of the reason why you go everywhere in the world and people are playing soccer. You know, being a Canadian, hockey's popular here, but hockey requires a ton of equipment and you need an ice rink, right? It's hard to play. It's not a very accessible sport. But you think about jiu-jitsu, all you need in jiu-jitsu, you don't need a ball. All you need is one other person, right? That's all you need to practice jiu-jitsu. I can't think of anything really more accessible than that. The only thing about jiu-jitsu that's not really accessible is, like you said earlier, the fear that people have about trying something that they think is scary. And I think maybe the best service that we can offer here is to help people understand that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, everyone's going to have an excuse for why they shouldn't do jiu-jitsu, whether they've got a physical disability or a limitation or a scheduling issue. Common problem I hear, you know, you see it on Reddit all the time. People ask, should I start jiu-jitsu now or should I get in shape first? Because I feel like I'm not in good enough shape to do jiu-jitsu. And it's people, just go to fucking jiu-jitsu. If you want to get in shape, go to jiu-jitsu. That is the single best thing that you can do to get yourself onto the mats is to just show up, right? And you do that and you will be amazed, I think, at what a difference it makes to your life physically. Another thing you talked about that I think is so important and not enough people talk about this is the power of jiu-jitsu to tailor it to whatever you want it to be. You talked about people with disabilities. I mean, one of my coaches has one leg, a friend of the show, David Lay, he's a black belt from New Mexico. He's got one arm. There's a guy up here in Vancouver, another guy that I train with who has one leg. I mean, Clinton Terry, famous blind grappler out of, I believe it's either Australia or New Zealand. His club is called Daredevil. Absolutely brilliant name. And, you know, there are a lot of people who have the limitations and they have innovated and customized jiu-jitsu, sometimes not just to get around their limitation, but in some cases to actually embrace it and maybe discover it wasn't a limitation at all. I mean, if you've ever sparred with someone who has a so-called disability, you will be amazed at how much they've been able to customize their game so that that disability doesn't really matter as much. And that's just such a powerful thing about jiu-jitsu. I'm not a multi-sport person. I can't speak to whether you get that kind of benefit out of other sports, but the thing I love about jiu-jitsu is you can adapt things, you can change things, you can make it your own. And it's just so accessible. And if only we could convince people not to be afraid of it, I think that we would open the doors to so many people getting that benefit. And again, like I said, I'm not going to say it's for everyone. Some people try jujitsu and they say, you know what? I just don't like it. I prefer hot yoga. Okay, cool. Do your thing, right? But at least you tried it. That in itself is a win. You overcame something scary. But for so many people who do stick with it, it becomes so much more than just a dumb hobby they do every weekend, right? It becomes one of the most important practices in their life. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, just the accessibility of jujitsu. And how can people like us help those new people overcome that fear of the first class, which is usually the hardest part of the journey?
I'm really big about, there's two things that happen. One, we have no control over. One is basically the school and the program with whatever marketing budget they have. But I think, and this is totally different, the instructor and the person that leads that program, it's so critical that when a new face comes in, that they build a culture, right? They build this like community thing, because not all schools do it. You know, not all schools, like a new guy comes in and not everybody, not that they're not welcoming of him, but they're basically in their little cliques. Three of them over there and four over here. And a new person comes in, you know, greet him. Not just like, we're not talking about sales. We're not trying to talk about, this isn't what we're trying to talk about. We're talking about, he just came downstairs and, you know, he wants to do an intro. Greet him. And then if they, like, we're not, this has nothing to do with sales. Like, the academy signs him up somehow and, you know, they sold him on the intro. Now he comes downstairs his first time. It's so critical that the person leading that class build a culture. And this is not an easy answer, because you basically, and I'm talking about, because if you come into my room and when I'm teaching and I see this is your first, I want to know your name. Like, I want to know how long you've been training. And then I'm going to pair you with somebody. You're not going to pick anybody. I'm going to pair you with somebody that I really, really trust, so that you have a good time, and I'm going to guide you. And no, we're talking about different levels here, because if you come into the Blue Basement Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the morning, that's a shark tank. There are a lot of good players in that room, which is okay. Because if you tell me that you have a year in or you just got your blue belt, that's okay. But I'm not going to let like you just go randomly into the room, because they don't know your time. They clap their hands. And like we said before, they want to go at you. And like, you're going to have a bad experience, because first of all, you never announced how long you've been rolling. And also their goal is to submit the player. But so I've tried to pair them. So I think it's very important that the person teaching the class always consider and put themselves as if they were in that person's shoes. They're nervous. They're scared. They don't know anybody in the room. So we want them to have a really good experience. Don't just let him roll with anybody. You should know your room. And my room is big. My room has 100 people on the mat. So, and I know all the levels. And if somebody's new in my room, I got my eyes on them, because I want to know their level. I want them to have a good experience. And when I say, when I got my eye on them, it's like, for two reasons. Is one, I want to know their skill level. So if their skill level is super high, they can roll with anybody. I'm not here to stop them from rolling with anybody. But I want to be able to, that they left with a very good experience. And now I'm telling you about a high level room. We're talking now of somebody just coming in. We can't, unfortunately, this is a totally different topic. If we're talking about marketing and sales and, you know, having kids do flyers, that's a totally different thing. We're talking about a person, we got them on the mat. They physically want to try the class. We should hold their hand from beginning to end. And I mean beginning, meaning they just got downstairs. They put their gi on. They're not sure how to tie their belt. We should hold their hand every single way, because all we sometimes need for them to do is come a few times. Because one time, it's like saying, like, you met somebody and you're going to tell them you love them. How? You know nothing about them. It's impossible to say that. You'll get those. Literally, I was one of those. The very first time I went there, but I'm the rare exception in that I was the first day I went there and I walked out. I was like, my God, this is the most incredible thing I've ever found. Not everybody's going to feel that way. And we're going to assume that 95% of the population isn't going to feel it. They're going to go, I wasn't I don't know if I really belong here. Yeah, they probably don't feel like they belong here because they didn't have a really good experience. So it's so critical. And the thing about that is it has to be the instructor, number one, who is ever working in the academy that day. It's like I see it all the time. A new person walks in, and the person at the front desk is on their phone. Steve, I've owned a lot of businesses. Seriously, I've owned a lot of businesses. BJJ is just an insane hobby. That's what people say to me. How'd you get there? And how do you know that? It's just a hobby I never gave up. I'm a businessman outside. Like, I literally have a company and employees and all these things. So, but I also understand business. And if we're going to talk about BJJ, business is BJJ, right? So if we mix the two together, it's, remember I said how you do anything is how you do everything. Why is somebody successful and another person isn't? It's because when that person walked in, that front desk person shouldn't be on the phone. That person shouldn't wait for the other person that walked in to say to them, excuse me, can I ask? No, that already is messed up. That person at the front desk should look up the moment that door opened and go, hey, how are you? With a smile, welcoming. I can't explain. Why are there so many Marriotts? You walk into a Marriott, the person at the front desk, hello, with a big smile. Yeah, I know. Maybe you don't like it, or maybe you do. But I appreciate it because that's the way you run a business. And that person at that front desk should feel right away. They should know, understand. Like, whoever you hired for that front desk should understand that person walking in is a little bit nervous. And we got to assume they all are. So that person maybe makes the sale. That's a totally different subject about doing the sales and stuff. Now they get handed off to us. And now we should have the same thing. And I hate when people do this because I see it all the time. People will sometimes, and we're talking about instructors here, because they don't own the school, they just work there. And they're like, I just worked here. God, I hate that. It's like, dude. And I will never let any of the people that come in my, and literally I teach in, because I feel like we're going to talk about being successful outside of this. I've literally been around, because I'm in Manhattan, like I've been on people's jets and their Maybachs and all these things. And I say it because I don't really care about money like that. But I say this because I analyze them and I listen to them and I went, like, why are they successful? Because remember we said about how you do anything is how you do everything, and the will to fight should be in everybody. But if we attach all these things, because the world is round, right? And everything's attached. You can't, if you want to, you're talking about bringing this person in and we want to retain them. It's so critical that the instructor treat that place like that student is going to make or break this academy. And it's how every student and how we do everything is how we should do anything, right? We don't want to lose this student. When they come in, we have the opportunity to maybe transform them, but they don't know. And we got to do this every single day. To me, it's important. It's incredibly important. But it's also important to Master Henzo and his daughter, Katarina. Like, Katarina runs the academy. It's incredibly important to her and every one of the teachers there. And that should be across the board for every BJJ school. Unfortunately, it isn't. You walk into some BJJ schools and there's nobody at the front desk, or you're walking around and all these people are rolling on the mat. Not one of them looks at you. Not one of them is like, hey, man, I don't allow it. It's really important to me that somebody's brought in, anybody that comes into the program or is potentially thinking of growing, coming into the program, that there's just open arms of love. And that we got, you know, how do you build this tribe? This whole thing that I told you about earlier, an hour ago, I told you about how these people like ran away from their potential, what they thought was their kidnappers, and run back to the kidnappers, is because it's beautiful there, man. It's just a lot of love and affection and support. And I rambled on for a bit, but I can't really go on about business because BJJ is just a crazy hobby, but they're all attached. How you do anything is how you do everything, man. So you got to be detailed. You got to be a warm, friendly, all these things. I rambled on and attached a bunch of things, Steve. But, you know, when John left, you know, the academy, went down, but my class, that class I inherited, was the first day it was four people. And everybody's telling me that it would never be the same. I was like, well, okay. Now, a week later, it was eight people. And then a week after that, it was 16. And it's not anything about the teaching. I've just been in business for a long time and understood business. I've had many failures, more failures than successes. And every time I was like, why did that business fail? Now I feel like if I do any type of business, I'm not failing. I already know why I failed. I learned, like, those were beautiful lessons because they weren't failures. They were just lessons. So those lessons that I learned, and I've owned restaurants, I've owned multiple health clubs of 15,000 square feet. I've done so many. I owned a bakery, like all these businesses I bought and sold and created and stuff. And a bunch of them failed. And I always wondered, why did I fail? What was I doing wrong? That I had, BJJ makes you analyze a lot of things. Henzo famously said, Henzo told me one time, he said, one day you'll look at life through BJJ eyes. And I didn't understand it, what he meant, but now I do, because I look at everything in BJJ eyes. It's like, there's a saying, there's black belts and then there's black belts. And how deep do you want to delve into this? Does every micro wedge map, every micro wedge matter? Every positional frame, every angle, every weight distribution, does it matter to you? To me, it does. But I am the person that wants to succeed. You know, we talked about earlier about the will to fight. Like, I never want to give up. I was the guy the very first day I got mounted. I lifted weights. I told you I own these gyms. I was into weightlifting and all this stuff. This little guy mounted me. He's about 135 pounds. I couldn't get him off of me. And I started to panic. And I begged that guy to get off of me. And he said, no. And I said, but I'm having trouble, sir, breathing. And he said, so learn to breathe. This is 25 years ago. I thought it was the worst thing you could possibly do, but I tell it because that person, going back into that guy I beat the shit out of. About 5 years later, he didn't come. I never saw him again until 5 years later. I beat the crap out of him 5 years later because I met John and all these things. But that's the worst business. That's the worst thing you could do. It's like that. Yeah, like that'll come. What he wanted to do was teach me something. Like, I'm crazy. I stayed, but most people wouldn't. Most people go, woof, I almost had a panic attack. 25 years later, if I'm in a bad spot like that, I could breathe through a straw for 35 minutes and think that I'm in the Caribbean at Paradise Island. But that wasn't how I started. You know, now after 25 years, if I had to breathe through a straw for 35 minutes, yeah, I'll breathe through a straw for 35 minutes. Like, it is what it is. But that mental, like, toughness and that all came from BJJ. But the question really was about retaining the member. We want to incorporate that business aspect of being successful, and that comes with hospitality, courteous, welcoming hands, a lot of love. You don't teach them those lessons of like trying to suffocate me and trying to get to the point where I can't breathe and trying to, that'll come, but let it come in steps. I was the crazy one that stayed, but the attrition rate in the beginning for a lot of academies is so high because it's just not run right.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%, buddy. I mean, something that I have said many times in this podcast is that there are probably a lot of people who could have been future world champions, but they never got that far because they were driven away in their first class or in their first week due to a bad experience. And jiu-jitsu, you know, a lot of instructors, I think they talk about the attrition rate in jiu-jitsu like it's a good thing. And I'll never understand that. You know, people talk about how 99% of people quit at white belt like that's some sort of badge of honor or toughness. No, that just means you did a bad job onboarding them and teaching them what this is all about. I mean, yes, when you are a black belt, I fully expect that as a black belt, you know, someone can just try to beat the shit out of me and I'm going to do my best to try to survive and hang in there and embrace the grind. But when someone is just starting this and they don't even know what jiu-jitsu is all about, if you put too much pressure on them, you run the risk of just driving them off and it's not because they're mentally weak or anything. It's because, look, they don't even know what they're getting into at this point. They're brand new babies, right? You have to help them grow into this. And then one day at some point, they're going to buy in and they're going to decide, okay, you know what? I get it. This is about self-development. This is about pushing myself, being tougher. And that's when you can start doing the nasty stuff to them, right? But I think that if you're going into your onboarding practice, trying to show people how tough it can be from day one, that's just not the time. You got to build people up to that, right? And I see this as a big mistake that I think a lot of instructors do make.
1,000,000%, Steve. Yeah, I know they want to build this like tough room and build these fighters and all. Well, it's not, we said this earlier, you actually said, you know, it's not for everybody, but a lot of times it's not for everybody. And that could be true, but you know, it's the environment that they created. It's not welcoming. And like, you know, it's not. You just basically, they came on the mat. You didn't even really ask them their name. Didn't ask them how long. And now you want them to get killed, basically. I tell the stories, you know, years ago, like because I've been doing BJJ for so long, there weren't a lot of places to roll like now. Now you can go every state. And every continent, every city has a place to roll base. You go to the Caribbean islands that never you could go. Now there's BJJ's everywhere. many years ago, it wasn't like that. And Master Henzo, it's called BJJ, but yeah, I don't know if you know the story about behind that, but you know, it's called Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but you know, they were going to sue him when he opened that school in New York. So that's how it became Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and BJJ, and they started naming it. But you know, this was a long time ago. We're talking about 22, 23 years ago, 24 years ago. You know, people came in the academy and we were told to like go full bore, sick them basically, go on them and beat them up. It was a terrible, and I laugh about it now because I think it's the worst thing you could do. But 25 years ago, I understood because they were trying to prove the art. You know, we used to get these Aikido guys and Kung Fu guys, and you know, they watched the UFC and they wanted to see if this was real. And those are the guys that used to come in and they wanted to joint lock you and all this stuff. And yeah, I get it. But for the average person, we're going to assume the average person coming in, they just want to learn how to defend themselves a little bit. They just want to, they have a curiosity of what this is about. You know, they heard it maybe Keanu Reeves is doing it, Mario Lopez is doing it, and Elon Musk is doing it. They want to come and try it. You know, it's like, welcome them. And like, I always really, what I love to do, and I think it works, is that when I get somebody that's really new and, you know, maybe I teach advanced, so I don't really get the beginner. There's a program at the academy, it does beginners. So that instructor is really, it's beginner. But in a lot of academies have to do beginner with advanced because we have so many rooms to roll at the academy. There's three floors, so it's a little different. But I've also been in a business and I've also been to many academies. And if you only have one mat, and you're just a small entrepreneur, mom and pop. Like, I understand, like, we have about 150 we have about 150 Henzos worldwide. So we're really big. Headquarters is really big. A little bit different. So if you go to a place that only has one mat, they have to do the intro guy with the group class. A little bit different when you only have 200 or 300 students than 2,000 students. So you're going to bring this guy in, and now you're just going to throw him to the wolves. Like, I personally like to take that beginner and I put him with one of my most advanced guys because I know they won't get hurt. The most advanced guys you think are the ones that you want to stay away from, but no, they're the ones you should roll with because they'll correct you. They'll be gentle in everything they do. When you put them with another blue belt, a guy maybe 6 months or has been there a year, oh my God, the poor guy's going to get hurt. It's just going to be two guys smashing into each other, not knowing what the hell they're doing. But that's me personally. If I had a suggestion, I do it at the academy. But my guy's not first day guy. When I say new jacks, I'm talking about a person that blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, been doing the sport maybe anywhere from a year to 6-7 years. If you tell me you've been doing the sport 10 years, I'll let you roll with anybody. It does, you go. But if you're pretty new, you're blue belt, purple belt, been doing it for 2 to 3 years, like I try to really put you with higher level people because I feel like I know you won't get hurt because they'll know how to sweep you correctly. They're not going to muscle moves. Like, so it's just a suggestion for me that I don't like to see anybody hurt. I don't like to see anybody walk away from the sport because, and we're talking about two different things. Like one is a business owner that's potentially maybe hovering around 100 students or 150, and he wants to go to 300 students. That's one thing. That's great. But what I'm speaking about at the moment is potentially changing somebody's life mentally. And if we scare them away, they're never going to know how beautiful this sport is. Like they came in for their reasons. They came in to lose weight, whatever, get better cardio, learn how to fight, protect them. But that's not what we want. We want them to learn the beauty of what this is. And the art isn't, I know it's hard to explain to somebody who's never done it. They're going to think that the beauty is the physical moves. No, it's what it does to them in their mind and how it improves the quality of their life. So it's like a totally different thing than I'm talking about. They'll never achieve that if you scare them away and you have to do those other things business-wise. Otherwise, they'll never have the opportunity to find something that's so beautiful that can magically touch them so deeply. And, you know, the things that they came in for, the self-defense and the fighting and better cardio and whatever they want to do, they'll forget that wasn't the reason. That was like what you came in for. you just got this gold goose out of it, like totally, like you just, so let's try to keep them when we can.
Absolutely, man. Just great mindset, great way of looking at jiu-jitsu. I agree with you entirely. It's funny because if you ask me when I was a white belt, you know what I would think of this? I remember when back then you'd hear all of the black belts say exactly the same thing. You know, I remember Jeff Shaw from Bellingham BJJ once telling me jiu-jitsu is a proxy for life. And you hear that if you've never trained before, you think, whatever, sensei, that's just all, you know, like woo-woo stuff. But when you've been training long enough, you eventually have that epiphany and that realization. Looking back on my journey, I've said this on the podcast before, I got into this sport for self-defense. I'm in my 40s now, married with kids. I have never once had to use jiu-jitsu for actual self-defense. I'm an old dad now, and so I'm pretty sure it's never going to happen. But that said, the things that have benefited me from jiu-jitsu, it's all of the other stuff. I met my wife through jiu-jitsu. I wouldn't have my family if not for jiu-jitsu. I have a closer relationship with my brother because of jiu-jitsu. I got him into it. He got addicted as well. We're both black belts now, many, many years later. I have made tremendous friendships and business relationships through jiu-jitsu as well. It's an incredible leveler when it comes to just breaking through social and cultural barriers. You can have just an average Joe rolling in there with a entrepreneur billionaire, and it's just like, it doesn't matter. You can have people from different religions, political systems, and it has this ability to break you out of your bubble and kind of expose you to other types of people. And it's amazing how much you realize none of that shit really matters when you're actually just rolling with someone. And I agree with you completely that, you know, the pandemic was a great example because you saw jiu-jitsu, people who were used to jiu-jitsu, what happens when they don't have it anymore. And I think it's pretty much inarguable. I mean, now granted, everyone's mental health was suffering, but I think for us, for people who use jiu-jitsu as a third place, as kind of one of the keystones of our life, to not have that, I noticed very differently. All of my social relationships were different, especially with the people that I trained with, because you didn't have that common ground anymore. And I think that much like how people rely on soccer as kind of this community thing to bring people together, to overcome cultural barriers, I think jiu-jitsu has that power too, right? It's just such a powerful way to bypass all of the bullshit that happens in regular life and just get to know people at a more intimate level, who they really are.
That is so true, Steve. It's incredible, right? Yeah, I have a young man that just got out of the Marines, and he'll go and have lunch with this gentleman. I don't mention his name, but that particular guy has his own jet and has a chauffeur, and they come from totally different walks of life. One guy went to an Ivy League school in on Wall Street. He's a known name. And this young man, like, grew up in a single family household and joined the Marines, and totally different. And the two will just share time together. And like, it's just amazing what the power of BJJ does. I'm so lucky that I get to see, because of the size of the school, so I get to see so many different walks of life. And I see people in their 60s and 70s. And like, it's a beautiful, beautiful sport. I know people sometimes think of like BJJ and they think of like Hoist Gracie and the Octagon and all that stuff. Yeah, I understand, like, that's how it, like, got some fame and stuff, but that's not what it's about. It's a beautiful thing. Oh, we were talking earlier about the thing with the tribe and this community. And one of the things that Weedify finds is that, like, the reason a lot of these guys commit suicide, obviously, they're, you know, when they're in war, they're over there. And maybe they're not in war. Maybe they just go over there and they join the army at a young age, right? They come out of high school, they join. And then there's a sense of like this community, like they have their platoon and their support and all that. And then they get out and they get back home and they don't have that. And that's one of the things that leads into that depression and stuff. We're not talking about any combat related stuff. That leads into it. And BJJ, what they find a lot of times is when they join these programs and getting these vets in, they get a community back. They get a support group back. And it's one of the aspects of how it changes lives. I really recommend it to people that are dealing with mental issues like depression, you know, all kinds of self-esteem, people that have been maybe assaulted. And now there's an issue with this insecurity of somebody being too close to you. BJJ has really powerful effects on people. So I recommend it to anybody.
Absolutely, man. Well, I will put a link to both the Happy Pill Project and Weedify in the show notes. I know in every episode, I always put links in the show notes and tell people, you know, go and click and follow and do this and that. But in this case, I really would appreciate it if this conversation resonated with anyone out there, and I'm sure it did. If you've been in the situation and you see the benefit and you'd like to help other people experience that, I definitely recommend supporting both the Happy Pill Project and Weedify. So again, keeping it simple, I'll put the links in the show notes to make it easier for people to find that stuff. I'll also put a link to our stuff. Everything we make lives at bjjmentalmodels.com. I think people know the majority of everything there is completely free, getting close to 300 episodes of educational material now, all available there in the podcast feed. You can also get access to our newsletter, about 10,000 subscribers, also completely free. And then beyond that, the way that we pay the bills is with BJJ Mental Models Premium. Join that, you get access to our entire audio course library. I guess I can announce this now, but we've got some real big hitters coming to Premium, working with us and making some content over the next while. We have just finished up recording some stuff with Marcelo Garcia, Rafael Lovato Jr., Elizabeth Clay, Joseph Chen. So a lot of big stuff on there. We're always trying to bring value to Premium. You also get our ongoing podcasts and you get direct coaching from our Black Belt Review team. Black Belt World Champs from all over the world available to take a look at your footage, break it down, critique, and give feedback. Sometimes it can be very hard to get detailed, tailored feedback in the gym just because there's only so much time in the day. An instructor has to divide their attention. So if you want to get a second perspective from someone at the highest levels to really go deep into your game, that's the best way to do it. First week's free, so please do check it out. Everything lives at bjjmentalmodels.com, the free stuff and the premium stuff. And I'll put a link in the show notes, as well as the link to Mike's stuff, as he mentioned. But Mike, this was a really awesome chat, man. I can't thank you enough for coming by. I've wanted to have you on the podcast for a while, and I don't think I've met anyone better than you at enunciating what the real benefit of jiu-jitsu is and how when you cut past the crap, it's not about fighting or choking or defending yourself. That's just a vehicle for practice, right? What you really get out of it is a much more valuable human thing that I think most people would never expect to get out of a fight sport. So thanks for coming by and sharing all of that perspective.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate your time. I love what you're doing. I really do. I appreciate you. I appreciate you having me. You know, everybody that does BJJ out there, you sometimes want to think that, you know, bring a friend, like, so that you teach them how to fight. No, bring a friend that maybe we could change their lives, you know, for the better, because, you know, they'll pay it forward to somebody else. And a lot of stuff's happening in the world and people are worried and deal with so many things that it'll just improve another person's life. So if we can open somebody else's life too and expose them to this, it'd be awesome. So just one person at a time. Thank you.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Mike. And thanks to everyone for listening as well. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.